With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. And I am so happy to be back. I only just made it, seeing as that I went to the TNT Comfest or Comcast, a bit of a comedy festival this weekend, where I got to meet with some of the greats, some of the big people around it. Really good independent media names there. Of course, Sonia Bolton turned up for the first night and a few others, of course, but it was a really good discussion. We had some panels and we really enjoyed ourselves, and you should come down to the next one because TNT comes to a town near you eventually. Yes, they do. And we're coming out through your radio. I'm so glad that you could join me here on TNT to talk about all of the stuff that's going on in the world. And there's loads of stuff to talk about today. We got some fantastic guests on. We've got some fantastic topics to talk about. First of all, why do we empathize with our enemies? Because they're human, like us. If you notice what happened in Russia recently, we've had the terror attacks, sudden mass terror attack that scares everybody and causes everybody to be a little bit frightened, of course, but then connects us. It's a very strange thing that what terror does to humans. But suddenly, you see the mainstream media, who are normally very anti-Russian at the moment, talking about the terror attack and sympathizing with the enemy. Yet why don't they sympathize with sanctioned murder or sanctioned warfare or sanctioned killing? Because it's the same sort of thing. People are dying because people are shooting people and blowing people up. And we are able to easily understand a terror attack because it's happened on our streets in our countries. Terror is a word that is internationally used to mean attacks that are not sanctioned. Yet the massive sanctioned attacks that we see happening all over the world right now that are led by army after army is amazing. And suddenly our sympathy disappears. Our sympathy disappears straight away because they're our enemy. With this paradigm over on the left, they're our enemy. And this paradigm over on the right, we can feel for them. And that's something that is reoccurring within our society, of course. The Ukrainian theater of war is an especially interesting theater of war. It's one to look into because it really gives us an idea of where we've come to in the world. For a lot of people who don't know, Ukraine and Russia, back in the 90s, if you had asked any Ukrainian or any Russian, they would say, we're distant cousins. We share the same history. We've had the same background. We've had the same disasters. We've had the same awful rulers and the same beautiful rulers. We've had similar destiny and we're on a similar path. But then, as soon as the war broke out, suddenly they're enemies. Well, it wasn't sudden. It was a progression. It was slow over time. It took 20, 30 years. So what happened? What changed? What changed people from going from a place of being able to sympathize with each other for their shared values, their shared history? What changed to make them suddenly to be at war and enemies? Well, it was a mass of Western NGOs, of course. It was the fall of the wall and Soviet collapse. And what we saw was many people, choose sides. And some of them were forced to choose sides. Some of them were coerced into choosing sides. And they were coerced into choosing sides by organizations, usually non-governmental organizations, which I've written about quite a lot, that were, of course, conduits of both German, American intelligence, along with a lot of other countries. And what we have seen in Ukraine since is a change, a big change, where people can no longer sympathize with their cousins. Instead, they have to pick a side. And the sides are set and are obvious. The sides are immovable now. And the terror attacks that happened in Krasnogorsk on Friday reminded me that our media suddenly changes. As soon as someone gets attacked, and it's similar to one of the attacks that we're used to, suddenly the whole thing changes. So why do we not empathize with our cousins and our brothers from across borders as soon as there's sanctioned attacks? I find that a very interesting thing to contemplate. And today we're going to talk about lots of things. We're going to talk about Ukraine with my first guest. We're going to talk about some subjects, which of course are very important, very close to my heart as well, especially when it comes down to what I call the non-governmental octopus. But first of all, we're going to go across and we're going to look into some of the recent news.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. I'm back and I'm here with Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. And over the weekend, the well-known and frequently controversial Jewish commentator, Rabbi Shmuley Boutech, I'm not sure how to say his last name, Boutech, went viral for all the wrong reasons when he posted his bizarre video, one of many bizarre videos, of himself celebrating Purim with a clownishly dressed up as what is referred to as Candace Owens Jew. So here with the story, join me now, TNT news producer Adam Clark. Hello, how are you today?
Hey, Johnny, man, this is great to be here. Long-time listener, first time doing this, just kidding. So this is pretty wild. Good old Rabbi Shmuley. I don't bother pronouncing his last name because, you could offend people if you say something wrong. But in case you didn't know, he does have a nickname. He's known as America's Rabbi. I'm not sure why. Let me set the stage, because if you missed this, there's a good chance you probably saw exactly what I'm talking about. But man, talk about jumping the shark. So backstory real quick. On Friday, it all began when Candace Owens and the Daily Wire ended their relationship. This was after the far-right commentator Owens, of course, repeatedly clashed with her fellow far-right talking head and Daily Wire's co-founder Ben Shapiro all over her opposition to support for Israel. And this comes days after Owens liked a tweet. Oh my goodness, she did. She just liked a tweet on X, formerly known as Twitter. The tweet that she liked was asking if Rabbi Shmuley was, quote, drunk on Christian blood again, end quote. So keep all that in mind. The news of Candace Owens' departure from Daily Wire was actually celebrated over the weekend by Rabbi Shmuley, who is a well-known and often controversial Jewish commentator who once counseled the famous pop star Michael Jackson. While celebrating the Jewish holiday Purim on Saturday night, Shmuley shared videos of him dressed up in costume on social media. The costume? Well, apparently he was dressed up as a version of all kinds of racist stereotypes of Jewish people. Yeah, it's pretty wild. He explained in one of these videos that he posted on X, quote, "For Purim, I've dressed up as a Candace Owens Jew, or is it just dress up? Or are we Jews deep down always like this? Filth, money, drunk on Christian blood, and dual loyalties for Israel," end quote. Wow. So I'm just going to briefly describe what he was doing in this video and then let you guys check it out for yourselves if you so feel the need. In the video, Shmuley was dressed in a T-shirt with $100 bills printed all over it. And he explains to the camera, quote, "Hi, everybody. Purim is a day of celebration. We feel bad Candace Owens lost her job, so I figured with her image of what Jews are supposed to look like, why not at least validate her? I am dressed up as a Candace Owens Jew," end quote. He then indicated towards a young child who he's holding in his arms in the video and added, quote, "This is not a Christian child. This is a Jewish child. But if it would be, I've got my Christian blood." And then he pretends to sip off of a sippy cup that's all it's like a red sippy cup. And he's like, spicy, delicious. I've got my Jewish nose. He's got like this crazy prosthetic. And he has filth, which was written across his forehead. And then he says, quote, "Because Jews are all filth, and more than anything else, what does You can't hear what he says, have, end quote. And then he throws up his arms and his onlookers start chiming in, money. And then he says, yep, we Jews are all about money. It's pretty cringy to watch, Johnny. But what do you think of this? Do you think I think he's done more damage to his reputation than anyone possibly could. But what say you?
Well, I'm not sure that that Shmuley can possibly do any more damage, and that's what his role is. I mean, I'm very, very intrigued by. I saw this with his little floppy nose that he put on, dressed up, and of course, you know, it's like always the same with Shmuley. He's very keen on making sure that the people who are against him know they're the enemies and the people who are with him know they're friends. So you see him often pictured. I mean, a lot of the big politicians. So I've seen Robert F. Kennedy Jr. with the picture around Shmuley's house. And, you know, there's a lot of people who feel like they have to, in a sense, bow to the king before they're going to be allowed in. But this is very much, obviously, he's trying to trigger people, and that triggering of people will then bring out not only the people like us who will say, well, that's just ridiculous, but will also bring out the people who are anti-Semites, who do hate Jews for whatever reasons that they've chosen. And I do think that this is baiting, you know, very much so.
Well, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. But I, you know, from my own experience with it already, I have yet to see any, you know, bad actors using this and saying, hey, yeah, he's right. Yeah, screw those guys. No, I'm not seeing that. And at least maybe the algorithms are working correctly for me on X, and or maybe I'm following the correct people and not a bunch of, you know what, jerks who are racist, anti-Semite. I'm not that. But yeah, I don't know. This guy's acting a fool. I don't think it's going to serve him or his purpose very well. And I think I've been seeing a lot of backfire from it. He's really embarrassing himself and his cause, in my opinion.
Indeed, but he's, I don't know if this is even a word, unembarrassable. You know, he's someone who doesn't have any shame whatsoever. He's there to be the target. So then he can turn around and say, oh, look, we're Jews and we are the target. Of course, he's heading up a very sinister, has a very high place in a very sinister organization anyway. So we're used to this sort of behavior. But this has all been a little bit of a puppeteering to get the people to throw comments at them so that they can be right. And that's what they do, don't they?
Yep, I agree with all of that, good sir.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Adam. I think we're going to go to a little break before we come to our first guest. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on Today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to Parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on TNT Radio. Now, for my first guest today, this is someone who I have a massive amount of respect for. I have been on his shows a few times. I mean, when I first was entering onto the scene, onto the news scene, there's no better place to go than talk on geopolitics and empire. And when I was writing the Schwab series for Unlimited Hangout, we first got to meet and discuss things. And what comes and shines out is his massive, amazing breadth of knowledge, his hard work that he puts in, his professionalism. He's also been a TNT radio presenter alongside running Geopolitics and Empire. So happy to be talking with you. Hervore Moric is here again, someone I consider a friend. So tell me you're doing well and everything's going well. Is it true?
It is. The tables have turned, Johnny. And, you know, I thought I was on vacation, but here I am back at TNT. And, you know, you never know. I might become a TNT highwayman again at some point. But it's good to see you on the platform.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I mean, it's a brilliant platform for being able to speak your mind. You know how hard that is, because if you search for geopolitics and empire on Google and you search for it on DuckDuckGo, you get a different list. Same with a lot of platforms. You're obviously heavily censored in what you're doing. Well, there's no one better place to discuss the current developments in Russia, really. I mean, we've seen the recent terrorist attack, or what they call a terrorist attack, in Krasnogorsk. I think I'm probably pronouncing that right. So tell the audience what you think the recent spate of terror that we've seen unfold in Russia. What do you think it is?
So some of our favorite topics, right? Very unfortunate. Right. When people are dying like this, but false flag operations. And I've been trying to digest this over the entire weekend, consuming content in Spanish, listening to Daniel Esselin's analysis. You know, he's former Russian FSB living down here in Mexico, and English sources. And, you know, I think we have to lay the foundation. Right. What are the possibilities? I think right off the bat, no one really knows. Right. It's a deep event. And it's something that we're not going to know for certain. But, you know, you can classify, you know, one category, one option is state terrorism. And then you have to ask which states, or it could be non-state terrorism, private actors that are involved, oligarchies, corporate interests, or jihadis. And, you know, I've been thinking about this lately. You know, I believe all states carry out false flag operations. That includes Russia, right? We can go back in history. We can spend an hour talking about all the different. Rome has done it. Japan has done it. Germany has done it. European governments have done it. U.S., Israel, Russia. So I believe the 1999 Moscow apartment bombings were a Russian false flag operation. And I've read the book long ago. I really recommend it, by John Dunlop, called The Moscow Bombings of September 1999, where he goes into that. And so, you know, we have to examine that angle. And then, of course, we know the Western false flag operations, 9/11, Oklahoma City, Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, Gulf of Tonkin, World Trade Center, 1993. And so I think you look statistically, it's the West who carries out a higher quantity of false flag operations. And so looking at this event, for now, I seem to have discounted that it was Russia. And it just seems to be more. I'm also discounting that it was jihadis. It seems to be the West, and there are a number of things to point to that, you know, you had the U.S. Embassy in Moscow on March 7th. People can look at all this open source information. On March 7th, they sent out a security alert telling U.S. citizens in Russia to avoid concerts and large gatherings over the next 48 hours. And that had been the last security alerts until these events on March 22nd, which is interesting. And then you had the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov. He pointed out that despite the U.S. embassy in Moscow issuing warnings to its citizens about potential extremist activities targeting large gatherings, the Russian embassy in Washington did not receive any such notifications regarding the matter. You had Serbian President Vucic also comment on this, saying he said on March 7th, the U.S. embassy called on its citizens not to visit Moscow shopping malls. The British did the same. This means they had information something was going to happen. And so, you know, that I've got more info here, but that's kind of where my feeling is at right now.
Yeah, that's amazingly massive. I mean, that there's a lot of big signs that are pointing at one thing here, boy. Yeah, that's for sure. There's a lot of obvious, the same symptoms we see with a lot of supposed terror, which we can see coming from state sponsors. So I really, when it first started happening, of course, all of these events gives you that strange, that initial feeling when you're watching it of you know that, especially in your game, you have to go through all of the information to try and rip apart what's really going on, what's really happening. But what's really happening seems to be the West were very intrigued by this straight away. So it seemed to look like, I was saying at the start, seemed to be that the media suddenly had lots of sympathy for Russians because it's a terror attack, and terror attack, that's different than the other attacks that against Russia that are state sanctioned. Do you think, I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that the most likely, if you don't think it's Russian or Islamic State, which of course Islamic State is kind of a conduit of a load of different have links with intelligence agencies, at least Western intelligence, then it's probably going to be something that comes from the West. And would you think it comes from somewhere like Ukraine? Is that what we're looking at here?
Probably, yeah. It's all one big blob when you think of the West. And just to go on, you know, one more note, Nick, Serbian in China, Nick Stankovic, who's been on TNT before and I followed him, he stated something that I thought about as well initially, where knowing that U.S. Embassy alert in Moscow for March 7th, Nick put out a tweet saying, another thing of note is that this attack was originally supposed to happen March 9th. In the run-up to election in Russia, there were a number of destabilizing attempts in the run-up to election in Russia. And so maybe the security was too tight, or again, some of these goons that are hired to carry this stuff out, they seem to be, you know, partially incompetent, right? And so maybe this attack was supposed to happen earlier, and for whatever reason, it didn't. But, you know, Jack Posobiec also came out and said this was a botched operation. But, you know, there are other commentators like Arnaud Bertrand, Frenchman in China, who says they don't know who blew up Nord Stream after a year and a half. But they replied to all atrocity accusations towards Israel that an investigation must take place to understand who's guilty. But within less than 24 hours, they know with absolute certainty who's responsible for the Moscow event. And we had Victoria Nuland, right, some months back. She was in Ukraine talking about surprises for Russia. And then, you know, Tony Schaefer, who was in the U.S. government, he's been on TNT before, he says, note to self, when you plan on attacking a nation using asymmetric techniques that look a whole lot like an act of terror, don't go on TV and threaten that nation and its leader that you plan to use asymmetric techniques that look like acts of terror. And then you also had Victoria Nuland again in February of this year, say, talking about accelerating asymmetric warfare. And so, again, it's, you can kind of trace it. They're saying, the West is saying they're going to do it, and then they go ahead and do it. And so it seems like they would use Ukrainian operatives, or as the official story says, they could have used Telegram to hire these guys who were doing it just for money. And someone also posted, this was interesting, from the 1980s, right? A CIA murder manual given to the Contras, where it says, if possible, professional criminals will be hired to carry out specific selective jobs. And so it just seems to be the West, Washington, London, Brussels. Who knows? It could also be Israel. There's another line of analysis here where it could be other corporate interests, Israel, Turkey, something related to Azerbaijan. I'll be talking to someone on my podcast later about that. You know, this could be domestic issues where it's related to stuff going on in Central Asia, Azerbaijan, energy corporate elite networks there, or maybe, you know, they're being used as a conduit for the West. And so, you know, it's murky. It's murky territory, but it seems all signs point to the West.
Some of the things you mentioned there are really interesting. The links to like Operation Condor style, that's operations. That's something that I see a lot nowadays. Of course, I think Operation Condor may have been the first real successful way to use multinational and multipolar intelligence operations across borders to make everything murkier. Now it's just matter of fact. That's the technique that the intelligence agencies use. And of course, bringing out someone like Newland, when you mention her, you think to yourself, oh, okay, obviously that they're up to something here. But when you say, you know, they're saying we're going to do asymmetrical warfare, well, that isn't that part of fifth generation warfare now? They'll just basically, they've started to basically say what they're doing out loud. And even if we turn around and all shout about it, they can use all of their tactics and techniques to belittle our side.
Yeah, I mean, Putin has mentioned this not long ago, that the West dominates the information space, right? The media space. And so, one other thing that I was thinking of, you just sort of believe the opposite of what Western media tells you. And again, that's not to say to believe the Eastern media, you know, to jump right into the other extreme and say, you know, Global Times or Russia Today is speaking the truth. But when have you really heard the Western papers say, use the term false flag with such gusto? Right. It's a Russian false flag. You know, Western mainline Newsweek was coming out and saying it's a Russian false flag. And it's like, but OK, we can never say that about the West. You know, 9/11, Oklahoma, the London bombings, the Madrid bombings. No. That's crazy conspiracy theory. But hey, Russia, they do false flags all the time. We never do it. And so I think that's one of the reasons that Putin and folks are reticent to. I mean, they should be using this same sort of rhetoric against the West, but I think they understand the limits of their power in the information space, and they're probably playing a different game, or maybe using different strategies. And, you know, some of the patriotic Russians, their criticism, they say that sometimes, you know, Russia is incompetent when it comes to a lot of this stuff. And so they just have to sort of grin and bear it. But yeah, it's overwhelming when you mention fifth generation warfare. The West can just, for now, get away with a lot of this sort of stuff.
Well, I think it's going to just increase and increase and increase. And is this another way to stop eventually what's going to happen, which is Ukraine will have to pursue peace talks eventually? They can't beat Russia alone. They will have to be peace talks unless there's all-out war. And this is just a time and a space for perpetual limited warfare to continue. Do you think that this is false flag events maybe perpetrated by the West within Russia are a sign that they're running out of options and they're going to have to pursue peace talks eventually?
I would hope so. But again, other analysts that I'm following from around the world that are more closely following the Russian domestic space are saying that this was a warning to Putin. So if, you know, again, if that's the case, then it's the opposite of getting peace talks. And you know, I would prefer, you know, we should have peace talks, but it just seems the psychopaths in the Pentagon, it seems like they want war. They want to kick off, you know, I joke, you know, hashtag let's get this party started, because every day, you're seeing these crazy stories of escalation everywhere in the Pacific and Europe and all theaters of war from the West, Brussels, London, and Washington and Tel Aviv. And so it just seems like, from my view, that they're using these events to try and escalate and try to get Russia to react. And then, you know, so in the history books, they can say, oh, look, Russia attacked us and that led to World War III. And it's like, I mean, they've done it all the time, right? And so, you know, the Vietnamese attacked us in the Gulf of Tonkin, so we had to start, you know, Vietnam War. And then 50 years later, I think in 2005, the NSA files were declassified. I had my students read them. It's like, no, there was no missile attack. Sorry,
Well, this is all very intriguing. We're going to talk more about this after we have a short break on today's news talk on TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we remove the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, welcome back to today's News Talk Radio. This is Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Hevorje Morić, who's amazingly, you can find his work in Geopolitics and Empire, and I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, haven't you? You've got students as well. Do you teach a course? Do you teach false flags to your students, sir?
I used to, you know. So I sort of, the genesis of my podcast and this type of work. By the way, people can check 2 years worth of my stuff on the TNT Radio archives. It's all still up there. But 2012 was basically when I started Skyping in. I was teaching a high school and university, the top school in Mexico. And I stopped in 2017 and I decided to Skype in people like Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, Lord Christopher Monckton, Ray McGovern, who briefed seven U.S. presidents, James Bamford, the father of the North American Union, Robert Pastor, who I met personally. I think I had the last interview with him in December of 2013. I Skyped him into my university classroom, and then he passed of cancer January 2014. And so, yeah, since 2012, I've sort of been doing that. It was originally called Dissident Thinker, so that's still up on YouTube. And then 2015, I sort of branded, you know, Geopolitics and Empire. And so it's been, 12 years I've sort of been doing this sort of stuff.
So in comparison to what the many on the indie media, you are really an old timer, and you've watched the whole thing change a little bit, I'm sure, because there's lots of different organizations, some of them independent and some of them looking to be, pretend to be independent, who have come up since then. What do you say to young aspiring journalists? Because I was a young aspiring journalist. Probably I started about 2015-16. So I started just after, and I was inspired by, of course, people such as yourself and the work of the people on the independent media, including like some of the TNT presenters, like Jason Bomas. I mean, Loose Change really, really had a massive effect on me. What do you see happening in the indie media? Do you think that the death of the mainstream media is leading to a rise of a neo-mainstream media, and that the independent media, the higher echelons of it, are basically turning into the dying embers of the mainstream, or forming into the dying embers of the mainstream media?
I think a lot is going on. And again, I was very pleased to have replaced me Jason Bermas, and you know, Loose Change from 2003 was again one of the things just that blew my mind. You know, that was part of my process. Loose Change, Alex Jones's, you know, Endgame and stuff like that. And so hats off to Jason. I don't know how he does it. He's got the morning Patriot TV show and then TNT. Yeah, you know, and what you mentioned earlier, I think if people want to get into space, whether it's writing, there's different formats of content creation. So some people like the Substack and just do written content, others podcasting or a mix. And so I think you have to be passionate. You have to have something burning inside of you to keep doing it, because it's a long road. You're going to be basically slandered, attacked, censored, deplatformed. And it's going to be a long time before you see any money at all. And so it's got to be something that, you got to have a passion for. People ask me all the time about starting a podcast, and I'm like, and I see these same people who they never end up starting it. And it's just like, you know, it's got to be something that's within you that's got to be pushing you to do it. And so I think a lot is going on in the alt media space. You've got still a lot of people that are genuine, doing a lot of good work. You've got people, I think, that are a bit narcissistic and egotistical, and some people start to grift. They get tempted by the popularity, and they want clicks and they want bigger followings and more money. And I don't like that sort of stuff. And then you've got people, you know, as you're alluding to, that either get co-opted over time, or some of them to begin with were some sort of counterintelligence operation. And there's people, I mean, you know, there's this talk now of wellness company, how that's being used to control. You know, I think the jury's still out on that. I don't know, but there's, you know, strange. It's really strange when something of that sort of operation takes place, where they're getting their hooks into so many people. But also some of the critics of wellness company, like Amazing Polly as well. You know, I think sometimes spending too much time on obsessing about one angle, it comes off a bit unhinged. And you know, I don't know, I think I talked to Ryan Christian recently, and you kind of have to be skeptical about everything, but you do see, you know, we've heard Mammies, right, David Icke, talk about it, the as you mentioned, this new sort of legacy media, and I think that's definitely happening. You know, I have questions about Tucker Carlson. He does, I watch his stuff, but still I can't, you know, Andrew Tate's dad, CIA, Tucker Carlson's. And it's just like there's too many patterns here that are just odd. And so you sort of see them, you know, who is it, Lenin, that said you become the opposition to steer it. And so I see a lot of that is going on. But we have to be careful, right, when we try to. This is why I don't go around accusing people, because it's hard to get that information. It's a gray area. But I'm highly skeptical these days.
It's very interesting. You mentioned someone there, the Amazing Polly, who's, of course, done lots of work over time, who runs along a lot of the type of work that I look into. You know, I see her commenting on it too. But she has been out attacking, of course, the people who work for the wellness company. I'm really posing it as a major conspiracy. And what I saw was that kind of like backfires as well, because some of the people that she was complaining about, she was funded actually by the same people originally. And it seems to be that then lots of questions come back. If you're going to fire off your guns, you better make sure you're super clean. Because otherwise it comes back on you. And there's a lot going on in the independent media that I don't think people are aware of at all. She's a very interesting lady. There's a lot of interesting people out there, and a lot of them are self-motivated. They have to be. And like you say, you know, they have to go on a journey where they're going to discover they're going to be censored, attacked. Even if they're originally working for someone, even if they're given the job to give out this information, they're still going to be smeared, censored, and attacked, because they're, of course, not out and not known that who they're working for or what they're doing. It's very difficult to know who to trust in this game. Who are your favorites at the moment? Who are the people who you say, okay, they're doing a fantastic job?
You know, that's a tough one. I came across a quote just last night on the Telegrams, which I really liked, from 1894. Advice given by Alexander III to his son, and here, Nicholas II. And he said, be strong and courageous. Never show weakness. Listen to everyone. There's nothing shameful in that, but obey only yourself and your conscience. And I think, you know, John F. Kennedy did the same thing as well. He'd sit there listening to the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying, let's, you know, start nuclear war or carry out Operation Northwoods. And he's probably like, okay. And then, no, you know, but you sort of gotta, so I, you know, I listen, I don't have any favorites. That's the thing. I don't think it's good to have this guru mentality. It's, for me, it's a level playing field. So I'm listening to Daniel Estulin in Spanish last night, Coronel Pedro Baños Bajo, Spanish dude, former Moldovan politician who I've interviewed, Yuri Roshka. You know, I'm listening to Alex Jones, who just interviewed Soloviev, the Russian TV host. I listen to TNT, you know, Last American Vagabond, Johnny Vedmore Show. It's just, you know, Jared Griffin. I mean, it just goes on and on. I've got a massive list of, you know, Richard Grove is great. There's just so many, a lot of my own guests, you know, Jacob Nordengard in Sweden. I just have a massive list. And so I just listen to everything, sift through everything. And I don't like having any sort of guru. You kind of have to, and you got to be looking at the data yourself, not even listening to all media platforms, but looking at the white papers, reading books. And now that I'm not on TNT, I got more time now to read books and stuff like that. So that's sort of my approach.
Yeah, that's a really good approach. I can't see fault in that at all. It's kind of what you've put into words, what I've tried to put into words a fair few times, which is listen to absolutely everyone. Trust no one. Trust no one to be completely right all of the time. The problem is that you have a lot of these people who are trying to put in information, who are working for agencies or not. They will give you correct information 99% of the time, and then 1% seed in things that they want to seed in. And you'll never know which is which, and you'll never know whether or not it was an accident and whether they decided to take a stance on this because of that, because they're being paid. And Daniel Estulin, you mentioned Daniel Estulin. I've been on his podcast. I didn't know he was, did you say he was ex-FSB?
Yeah, as I understand it, in the 90s he was FSB, and then in the early 2000s he decided to start writing on a lot of these topics. And then, you know, his claim to fame initially was the whole Bilderberg book, which sold like 7 million copies. I got to spend an entire day with him. I flew him in to Guadalajara in 2016. He had been in Venezuela. And then he was going to pick up in Mexico, because I had Skyped with him at that time. I Skyped him into my classroom. Actually, it was a small hall where he spoke in Spanish to people in my school. And then I saw he had been coming to Mexico City in 2016 to pick up the International Mexican Press Club Award as, you know, international journalist. And so I said, hey, Can you come to Guadalajara talk here? And my students organized a public event in Guadalajara for him. So I got to spend the entire, I picked him up from the airport, got to spend the whole day with Eschelin. And yeah, he was Russian FSB. He's written about that in his books. And now he's, during COVID-1984, I think in 2020, he decided correctly to flee Canada. He was living at the time, and he's down in Cancun right now, somewhere in the Cancun region. So,
yeah, I had to end up going to Cancun for 2 weeks back from Chile, so we didn't end up going into quarantine with a little 5-year-old for 2 weeks when we come back to Britain. You actually, there was no restrictions through Mexico, and Cancun's a very nice place to hang out. I mean, that is a very nice. But we were talking about you mentioning that there's a lot of people who used to work for intelligence agency, and they're not all going to mean that, like, they're always working for intelligence agencies afterwards if they enter into the independent media. But it does seem like there's a lot of it. You mentioned Tucker Carlson's father, but there's also a selection, I think, of people who are media faces whose parents have also been high-level media, alternative media, or high-level sort of political advisor. So the Gray Zone could be a good example of that. Aaron Maté's father, of course, is pretty well-known. And Max Blumenthal is kind of the same. They've all got these links. Do you think that... It's just being exposed to this world that makes you either want to be in it, or it's not just, of course, intelligence. As soon as you're exposed to mystery of intelligence operations, that you can't help looking into it?
Yeah, I think we have to give these people some benefit of the doubt and agency. And I don't like, again, some of these unhinged commentators who say, I met Max Blumenthal last year, got to hang out and chat with him at the Ron Paul Institute conference. He says he listens to Geopolitics and Empire. And I know the connection about his father. In fact, when I was teaching courses, I had students read the primary emails from Hillary Clinton, which showed how, regarding what happened with Libya and Gaddafi, there was this email that this is when a lot of the State Department emails were released regarding Hillary Clinton, and they were openly, and it was Hillary Clinton's lawyer, which I think is Max Blumenthal's father. I forget the name. Was it Sidney something? Sidney Blumenthal? I'm not sure. But they were talking about, yeah, Libya has all these gold and silver and oil resources, and basically saying, like, yeah, we should overthrow Gaddafi, get those that oil and gold and silver. And so, I think we have to keep that in mind, who their parents are, but we also have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, I met Eschelin. I've been following his work. He seems genuine in what he's doing, up until now, Max as well. But you never know. Maybe there's some longer game at play. So we kind of have to keep that cognitive dissonance going where, okay, that's their background. This is the work they're doing. And again, there's this agency where they don't want to be part of this whole sort of thing, and they want to work against it. So,
well, there's a lot of people in the world who literally do the opposite of what their parents do on purpose, because that's psychology some of the time, isn't it? You're looking at whatever your parents are doing and you're like, oh, I hate that, and I hate what they're doing, and I hate them, and then they must obviously do the opposite. I find it very intriguing. I agree with you completely. You have to take people by their actions. So it's always the actions. But I'd also like for people in the independent media to have a better conversation with people about what they do, what their connections, what their motivations are, because I think there has to be a sense of developing trust. And I suppose, talking about that then, what are you up to? We're coming up to the end of the hour. So what are you doing now? What's your plan? Because you've got all of this time on your hand to do reading. And of course, I mean, if anybody goes on to Geopolitics and Empire, what they'll do is they'll find pages and pages and pages of hard work, but also with you going around meeting people, meeting with people who want to have a conversation. What's your plans? What are you going to use your time, extra time doing now?
Well, I noticed that I think I'm one of the very few podcasters that I follow or listen to that I got little Rugrats kids. And so, you know, it's easier when if you're single or solo, like Jason Burmes or someone, I assume, to do the work. But, you know, I got kids tugging at me. And I haven't had much time to even take a break. A lot of social events here in Mexico. But my plan is to just kick into higher gear, geopolitics and empire, do as many interviews there that I can at a leisurely pace. I got a couple this week. And then I'm going to open up a merchandise store. Something that I've been wanting to do for a year. I've had time. And so stuff like this, build out merchandise store. And on my Substack, people can subscribe $5 a month. And then, you know, doing stuff like I'm going to switch to doing a weekly Zoom chat with subscribers only. You know, I started that in January of 2022, but then TNT picked me up. And so, I'm just going to be trying to dig in harder on geopolitics and empire.
And how's the missus with you doing all of this work? How's she about that?
She's good about it because she's like, hey, we need money now, so get to work.
Well, I tell you what, talking to Jason Burmes, is probably a lot of ladies out there who'd love to be able to whip up that hunk. Listen, thank you, Havoye. Thank you. Really important. Is it geopoliticsandempire.com you're at?
That's it.
Yeah, it's geopoliticsandempire.com. I just got it bookmarked, so I don't know. A lot of people do listen. Go and listen to Mr. Morich's work and understand a lot more. You will. It's awesome. Thank you.